Hector, will you please gather Captain and bring them in, please?
Everybody ready? Dr. Murphy? Good evening. It is the regular board meeting of the Kenya TOISD Board of Trustees. It is July the 23rd. It's 6:02 p.m. And Tony, would you please call roll?
Mrs. Cousins?
Here.
Mr. Cornell?
He will be here. He's forthcoming.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Here.
Mrs. Mendelson?
Here.
Mrs. Quintana?
Here.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Present.
Mrs. Searles?
Here. That would take us to the pledge to the flag. And Mr. Rodriguez, would you be so kind as to lead us this evening?
Yes, Madam President. I
pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Honor
the Texas flag. I pledge allegiance to thee, Texas, one state, under God, one and indivisible. Thank you very much. And Ms. Quintana, would you be so kind as to read the mission statement, please?
Kenya TOISD will provide a quality education to assure that all students graduate on time, are prepared for higher education, or are workforce ready.
Thank you very much. That would take us...
Item 2 is Superintendent's comments. Dr. Murphy?
President Searles, board members, good evening, and audience, thank you for being here. It's nice to see some faces in the crowd. If anyone... several items. First of all, we appreciate the board's approval on Thursday night of the design of the new pre-K-8 school, which will go in the Cimarron neighborhood on the east side of our district. Right in front of me are the schematics of the approved school, both the exterior and part of the interior. I notice we only have the downstairs portion. There's one more upstairs portion that needs to go in. But thank you, board, for that effort. And it's a great day that we have a new school now moving forward. We also want to let you know that our two Teacher of the Year finalists, Ms. Brooks and Ms. Smith, interviewed on Thursday at Region 19 for Regional Teachers of the Year. We had a lot of fun. You know, we have these two new specialty buses with Kenya TO all over them. And we took two busloads full of staff members over to Region 19. We parked those buses right up by the doors, and so that all the contestants from all the other districts had to walk between our buses to get in the Region 19, and we have noisemakers. So it was a lot of fun, and we know that they both felt very confident about their interviews, and we look forward to hopefully having another Regional Teacher of the Year. And then finally, an exciting thing, we so much appreciate you guys and the school board and all that you do in governing and leading our district. And this month, we were able to enter the Kenya TOISD School Board in the Honor Board application process through the state. And we submitted about 100-page document to Region 19 in the state, highlighting the wonderful work and the wonderful efforts of the Kenya TO School Board. And it is our greatest desire and expectation that we shall win the Honor Board Award for Region 19, if not the state. And we're thrilled to submit that for you guys. And we did that about a week and a half ago. So with that, thank you very much, President.
Thank you, Dr. Murphy. Tony, that would take us.
Open forum, and we have one individual signed up to speak, Ms. Maldonado.
Good evening, Ms. Maldonado.
Good evening. Board President, board members, Dr. Murphy. I'm concerned about the revision of your local policies on leave of absence. And I expressed my concerns last week at the committee meeting that not everybody was present. And I know that you are approving the first reading today. But this is a topic that came up at DAC, and I'm going to remind Dr. Murphy. And one of the concerns was to reward through compensation employees for attendance. Although I know that that is not doable right now, probably due to budget, which is, I'm okay with that, but don't penalize us. Don't penalize us for being here, because by approving this reading, this revision, as Ms. Carrasco proposed it last week, it's, you're penalizing those that are here by limiting the amount of days that we can take, personal days that we can take in a year. And she's proposing a 5-day limit or a 5-day max. Well, I for one am hardly ever absent. And I know there are many employees like that. I ask, if you're going to max it, you know, where's the data to support the overwhelming number that it seems to be that are abusing it, which I don't think that's the case. But let me give you a scenario. Let's say that this semester, for whatever reason, I have to take 2 days of discretionary leave. And maybe they're not together, one day here, one day there. Then maybe next semester or next in the spring, again, for whatever reason, maybe I have to move my daughters back home from out of town, and that's going to take 4 days. Well, 4 plus 2 is 6. I'm going over the max that she's proposing, so what? Am I going to be docked for that one day when I have a pool of 50 plus days to pull from? I don't think that's right. You have certain circumstances and situations when you have to use those days that you've earned. Now, if there are a certain amount of people that are abusing it, then go after them, talk to them, or I don't know if you could, you know, max them. But the days, number one, are earned, you know, by state and local. And so by maxing, it's like you're penalizing me or the others who are not abusing it. And again, the topic came up to reward those employees that are constantly here for their attendance, and we used to have that. I know, Mr. Jones, you remember that. Mm-hmm. We used to reward us with a stipend. Well, if that's not doable, that's okay, but don't penalize us. You know, because if I'm in a situation where I have to take the days 4 plus 2, I don't want to get docked when I have 50 plus days. So I really hope that you reconsider this revision, because I don't really think that the pool of people that are abusing it are that huge. And like I said last week, you're going to penalize the whole group for what a small group is doing. So I would really ask that you would consider this, please. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Maldonado. Is there anyone else?
No.
That would take us to the consent agenda.
Item 4, and administration recommends approval of the consent agenda as presented.
Would anybody like to take anything off of the consent agenda?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Okay, let's start ladies first. Ms. Quintana.
I would like to pull G.
Thank you. G will be pulled, and that is the first reading of the revision of the local policies, DEA and DEC, compensation and benefits. Mr. Rodriguez?
I'd like to pull item J.
J is pulled, and that's the contract with Linebarger, Gogan, Blair, and Sampson, LLP.
I and J, or just J?
J. J. Just J. Did I say I?
No.
Just J. Anyone else?
Rachel already got mine.
Yeah, Rachel got mine, too. Ms. Gonzalez, any? Okay.
I'll discuss when they're discussed.
You're good with the consent agenda as it is? Then, is there anyone, could I get a motion to accept the consent agenda, which would be A through W, with the exception of G and J?
So
okay.
I'll second.
Okay.
Monica and I are on the same.
You got it, yeah. And Tony?
Mrs. Casares?
Yes.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Strauss?
Yes.
And item G, first reading of revisions of local policies DEA and DEC.
Okay, I was one of those people that was for the meeting. I don't know.
Do you want to review?
Yes, I would like a review and for you to go through what you went through.
Mm-hmm. Please.
First of all, let's start with DEA. Policy DEA has one sentence on page one that says, under pay advancement, on page one it says, no employee with less than a satisfactory performance evaluation shall receive a pay increase. And the recommendation is to remove that sentence. I believe Mr. Blanco had recommended that last year. We just haven't gotten around to it, and at this point in time, that is what we want to remove off of that agenda.
Yes, and through the chair, that was something that the board has fully discussed, but it has been a while. Steve recommended it, and we're just now getting to doing that. Exactly what she said.
And is that everybody on the same page with that? Okay, thank you, Ms. Crosco. And the next one would be DEC Local.
DEC Local. DEC Local, we've made some revisions to it that are more, I guess, to make it a little bit more explanatory. And there are three, some of the things here that were, and I'm going to just highlight instead of read over it. We're looking at changing from a catastrophic sick leave pool to a catastrophic sick leave bank. And we've developed a regulation that is in conjunction with this that outlines all the steps as far as currently, and I will turn this over to Mario to go into it more in depth, but let me we'll go through some of the other changes. On page three of the policy, we're looking at also discretionary use of leave is at the individual employee's discretion, subject to limitations. And some of those limitations are, as a practice last year, and we had it in our employee handbook, that the day before a school holiday and the day after a school holiday, and we're talking only Thanksgiving break, Christmas break, and spring break, that employees were not to be out on discretionary leave on those during that time. Even during end of semester or end of year exams, during the TOCS or STAR testing, that also is not going to be allowed. And we're only talking discretionary leave. Employees sometimes get confused with discretionary and non-discretionary. So in this instance, we're only talking discretionary leave.
Madam Chair?
Yes, ma'am.
Ms. Carrasco, well, this one, under discretionary use, does this apply across the board, or?
The one for the holidays, what we did last year when we ended, we said that those employees that were 238 and 258 work calendars were exempt from this. So those were the exceptions. So I will go ahead and make note of that and put that in there, that there is an exception for those employees that are on those two work calendars. And so I can go ahead and make that adjustment. But you're right, Ms. Gonzalez, to read it as it is, it would apply to everybody. But like I said, last year or this past school year, we had that exception for those employees.
So that then would need to be revised.
As we will just add a sentence in there saying that there's an exception for those employees with those work calendars that work the 238 and the 258.
Okay.
Basically, they're year-round employees.
So this is for instruction only, or?
No. This is for those employees. Basically, most of these are in your manual trades area.
Through the chair.
Yes, sir.
First of all, it's important to note that this is a long-standing rule. It wasn't a rule that was created last year. It was this last year that we started to enforce it. It's only at, even though the policy actually reads any holiday, we're only enforcing it at Thanksgiving, Christmas, and spring break. And it is for all employees except those on 238 and 258 calendars. So it would include central office workers, workers at campuses that weren't specifically instructional. The feeling is the kids need to be here on those days. We need to be here on those days. We do understand the 238s and 258s that have to work even during Christmas vacation, that have to work during Thanksgiving holiday, that they would not be applicable to that rule. But other than those employees, we all need to be here on those days.
So it applies to central office staff?
Yes, ma'am. Applies to me, applies to Martha, applies to everyone other than 238 and 258. In public education, we're blessed with these holidays of Thanksgiving, Christmas, and spring break, different than our other professional colleagues. And it's wonderful that we get to take advantage of them. But the feeling is that we need not to take an overly over advantage of them and lengthen them even longer.
So we will add that sentence to clarify this for you.
Okay.
The other item in here is the duration of leave. Employees may use and request approval of discretionary personal leave days not to exceed flex days available. In other words, if you're an employee that approves flex time, then that you can take without question. And if you want to take all the days that you've got back to back and it's approved by the supervisor, then that's fine. Or a total of 5 state and or local days per school year. And so what we're doing here is limiting the personal business reason. If somebody has 50 days, let's say, of local and state leave combined, I mean, they have all the other reasons that they can use if they're out sick, if they need to go on FMLA, if there's a family illness. Of course, you have access to all those days. It's for personal business that you only have a limit of 5 days per year.
What was it previously?
There was no limit. Personal business at any time.
I would be interested to know, in the last meeting, were you able to show them who uses this? How many? I'm not talking about names, but just about cases.
I didn't bring forth that information, but for example, I can talk very general as in a couple of instances that I recall, is that we have, for example, what happens is that people tend to use their state and local leave and refer to it as vacation time. And it's really not. I mean, your sick leave days and all of these pennies that we get, it's more like an insurance, that it's there if we need it. If there's a catastrophic illness or something with our family, then yes, I mean, it's there, it's available. So it is a benefit that we have as a district. However, for it to be referred as vacation time and people use it use their local days or their state days and call them personal business and take up to, weeks at a time, I don't think it's appropriate.
But do you know a percentage? Is 1% doing this? Is, almost everybody doing it?
We've got employees with exemplary attendance records.
Is that the overall? Overall, we have exemplary attendance?
No, not necessarily.
Okay.
And I don't think, but I mean, we've had instances, for example, I can tell you off the top of my head, we had one individual, and again, we're talking about people in the classroom, that was remodeling their home and just said, I need to pay personal business, and they were gone. And so we're paying for a sub, they're out for personal business. I mean, these are folks that work 187 days in a school year, and yet they're out that many days during school. I mean, you've got the summer to do some of those things. We've had instances where we have individuals that go out and do speeches. They go out and lecture and speak, and they do classify that as personal business and travel to Canada. And so on personal business, mm-hmm. I mean, there's really not much
So this way, what we're doing is limiting, the leave is available for anybody to use it if they need it for those specific reasons that the district lays out. However, for personal business, I think that that is something that, you know, we're always open to when there's exceptions. But, I mean, we have all the allowable reasons for folks to be out. And our personal business, really, there's no verification of anything. You know, it's just...
Yes.
I'm sorry, Mrs. Gattis, but I was one of the members that wasn't here, and I apologize. Do you have a cost associated with the absences that individuals that you felt took advantage of?
I don't have that worked up. I could. I also have talked to Dr. Murphy about TASB offers a service for absences review. I'm really considering that because I wanted to see what kind of other things we can look at to minimizing employee absences. And so that's one of the things that, I mean, we certainly can, if you want to look at cost, you know, I have not put dollars to that, but I certainly can do that.
Ms. Quintana?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, like the ones that abuse it, can their supervisors not address them?
Yes, they can, and what we've done, what we're going to be doing for this coming school year, which is a reason for revamping this policy, is that we're going to be looking at that a lot closer, looking at absences. I mean, it's impossible from the HR end to be able to review employee absences district-wide on a daily basis. So we're going to have to train our supervisors to look at that, because what's happening now is that I guess sometimes the supervisor, we catch things after the fact, and sometimes by the time we catch them, to be able to correct those, and then sometimes in finance, you know, it causes those issues. So between HR and finance, we're going to be monitoring those a lot closer. And on the HR side, especially coming up with our Leadership Academy, we do plan to provide the principals with some direction on what they need to do and notify us if employees are out.
Ms. Carrasco, also, you said there's people that go out and give lectures. Well, that's like having a site on a job on the site, correct? Because they're making money if they go out and
again, because it's personal business, we don't question that as far as if they get paid. They may not, but they volunteer to do, and they go out of town on various occasions during the course of the year, and the personal business. And so if you look, I mean, people are out, you know, 20 days, 25 days on personal business. And usually, you know, for personal business, we don't question. I mean,
straight? They're out 25 days straight?
No, I mean, sporadically throughout the year. And if you're looking at somebody that only works 187 days, you know, that reduces their workforce significantly.
That'll run them out of their
especially
two women. That'll run them out of their leave, too. They won't have anything to fall back on.
It does, and in some instances, they do go into dock mode. But in some instances, we do have folks that have a considerable amount of time. And so at some point, it does cause a hardship for the district, because if it's someone within the teacher ranks, then, of course, we've got to provide substitutes. So we're trying to minimize for that reason only. That doesn't mean that the employee cannot access their days. And of course, they're available to them for any of the other reasons that we have available.
You know, maybe it's just me, but I somewhat feel like this is a local policy, and we're taking possibly the cart before the horse. I would feel more comfortable if we did the workup, did the homework, looked at this, and put a dollar to it,
okay,
and then revisited.
Mm-hmm. And how many employees
are going
to do it? Mm-hmm. As for the ones that have exceptional attendance.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That are one we... one of those that I didn't like. I don't like missing.
Yeah. You know, are we punishing the good ones? Like, I mean, this happens all the time in school for the, you know, the few bad ones. Mm-hmm. I would feel more comfortable reviewing kind of the topics we've talked about, and then this coming back maybe in October or whenever you could have that kind of, you know, whatever your timeline would be, that you could have some of these questions answered and we could look at it from a monetary and a percentage basis. Is that?
Yes.
Okay. So what part then do you want to remove where it says duration of leave? We just strike that paragraph out?
I would say duration of leave stays the same.
Well, that's the duration.
Yes.
So we're talking about the 5 days and the
okay.
plus days.
Then that goes away.
Okay. So we can just remove that out for now.
And
everything else.
What about the local leave? About on page 5 of 9. The employees who are absent from work for 3 consecutive.
That one was in touch.
That's fine.
Uh-huh. Does anybody see anything else that?
The other thing here that we do have, Ms. Quintana, is on the last, well, on the second to the, on page, well, I'm not looking in the workbook, but on page 8 of 9, which is the reimbursement of leave upon separation. And what I had explained previously is that I had attended a session where they spoke about this, and basically it's kind of like they're saying it's an incentive for people when they retire. Our practice has been to pay people retiring that give 90-day notice to the district to pay their local days at half the employee's pay rate. And they get a maximum of 30 local days paid out to them. And in practice, that's what was happening. It was only for those that were retiring. However, in one of the sessions that I attended with TASB, what they explained was we couldn't single out just retirees. It's anybody that's separating from the district. And so in talking to payroll, basically, then we just tweaked this if it's going to apply to everybody, and saying that it is 90. We're talking business days, and then we're saying that employees have had to have been here with the district at least 10 years of service, and we modified that from 6 years of service, and then of course. We had never written in what the reimbursement rate was. It was just a practice that it was 50% of the employee's daily rate. And so I went ahead and put that in there. But of course, that also is subject to recommendations that the board should have on that.
Does the board have any thoughts or would you like that to be looked at further or?
Okay, I have a question.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, contract employees, is that exempt or not exempt? Are we going to reward that or are we going to limit this?
Contract employees are exempt.
Well, I know, but it says contract employees. I know that they receive a contract, but so are you going to add a paragraph there for not exempt or?
Where is it?
It says non-contract employees. Is that, do you see that the next sentence down? Does that?
Yes.
Also, you wanted to say instead of contract and non-contract to say exempt and non-exempt?
Well, I don't know what,
yes.
What
we
you
can do
suggest.
That. We can do that.
We are the experts.
We can do that. And we can say exempt and non-exempt. We could change that. Thank you for that suggestion. Any other recommendations? And then I'll turn it over to Mario to explain about the sick leave bank versus the sick leave.
Any other questions on? Okay. So we are not going to, am I correct at the board, we're not going to accept this as the first reading. You'll come back with revisions and information, and we'll have another first reading.
The other issue.
Go ahead.
Just if we wanted to, if it needed to be expedited, we could accept the first revision with the recommendations by the board. And then on the second, those recommendations should be put in so that way we can move forward.
With part of it,
that's what I was going to say. We could just remove that other one.
For reading two, I will provide you all the changes that you're all recommending this evening.
And you can accept or reject reading two.
Yes, that's acceptable to me. Is it to the rest of the board? Okay, very good.
So might you explain now
the sick leave.
Good evening, Board President Searles, board members, Dr. Murphy. In terms of the sick leave pool on page 5 of 9 of the EC local, it's our practice to manage cases where we have employees who have depleted their sick leave as or through a sick leave pool. And our two main concerns here is privacy, and two, it becomes an unfair process. So with that in mind, we have now before you a DEC regulation. And the regulation is basically laying out the guidelines for us to be able to establish that catastrophic sick leave bank. And any employee of the school district who is eligible to earn leave will be able to participate or apply for membership with the bank. And during the annual enrollment process of our benefits, employees will be able to donate 2 local days to establish their membership. At this point, once we establish the bank and we feel that we have enough leave available, or we have a healthy balance in the sick leave bank, then we'll determine if, in fact, every year we need to request donations from employees. But we feel that, you know, during the initial enrollment process, we'll be able to receive enough days, local sick leave, to be able to manage any catastrophic illness. Do you have a question?
Yes, I do.
Sure.
On it going from a pool to a bank, are those days going to carry over or you're starting from scratch?
Well, a pool at this point is handled in the following manner. When we get donations for an employee, whichever donations are not used, they're pretty much left with that employee. They're not necessarily moved forward to any other case that we might have, any other catastrophic case. We have had cases where an employee receives, let's say they need 10 days, and they get the 10 days within a couple of days. We have had employees who are in the same scenario. They also have a catastrophic illness, and they need also 10 days, but you know, unfortunately, only 2-3 donations come through. So the point with that is that know that whichever donations we get stay within the employee that gets the donations. We don't forward those donations to other employees because whomever makes that donation to the employee in mind.
Directly, right?
Exactly.
So there's no separate day sitting somewhere?
There's not a balance available for catastrophic cases, per se. So the sick leave bank will become that. We will have a balance that can be used regardless of the name, regardless of how infamous that person is, regardless of how many years they have invested with the school district, as long as they meet the guidelines within that regulation, they'll be able to apply. And of course, you will have a committee in place that will review every case to make sure that, in fact, it fits the definition of a catastrophic illness. And once the case is evaluated, then we will proceed on applying those donations for those days.
And the committee, what will that consist of?
We're going to have staff from Human Resources, other members from the central office, and you know, as we get familiar with the committee, what the committee should consist of, more likely a nurse, professional staff, and so on, because of course we're not licensed healthcare providers and so on, so we would need.
But we should have a bit from everywhere, you know.
Right. Well-rounded.
And it's not going to be a very large committee because we're dealing with sensitive medical information.
Right.
So it will be a small committee that will be able to evaluate these situations.
But diverse then.
Yes.
Right.
We'll be able to.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So what we have in mind is for HR to be the filter to make sure that they meet all the requirements and that we have all the documentation needed. And then once we have that at hand, I'll be able to present that to the committee so the committee can make a decision. In addition to that, every 12 months, the employees or the members will be able to opt out of the bank, but any donations made into the bank will remain in the bank. It's not retro or, you know, it's just, they have already made that donation, so that will remain within the balance.
So every year, you redo the bank?
Well, we may not need to do that. It depends on how many cases we have per year. We might have three catastrophic cases within a year, and those three cases might be, they might deplete our balance. And perhaps the following year, we might need to request more donations.
Okay, but it'll be on a need basis.
Need-to-know basis.
Okay. I
so
thank you.
So it's like the bank, you make a deposit, you can take out. So if you donate
understand.
Your days, then you'll be able to apply for this.
Okay. I see Mr. Coronado is joining us. Good evening, Mr. Coronado.
Good evening, everybody. Sorry I'm late.
We're discussing DEC Local, the sick leave bank versus the sick leave pool.
Any other questions?
Any other questions on this? And is everybody comfortable with this? Ms. Mendoza? Okay.
We'll make those corrections.
Okay.
So you'll recommend for reading second reading with corrections.
Okay. Do we have a motion then?
I make a motion to approve policy DEA local with changes made to administration and policy DEC local.
I'll second.
For the first reading?
For first reading.
Okay, motion made and seconded. Tony?
Mrs. Cazares?
Yes.
Mr. Coronado?
Yes.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Strauss?
Yes. And that would take us to J.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Item J is contract with Weinberger, Gogan, Blair, and Sampson, LLP for the administration appeal of any judicial appeal of property value study findings as conducted by the Comptroller's Office as of January 1st, 2012 for the 2013-14 school year.
Board President Searles, members of the board, Dr. Murphy. I did not place this item on the agenda. I believe it was Martha Aguirre. But I can pretty much anticipate Mr. Rodriguez's question. Are we going to go out for bid this year for this? Yes, we are. That's your question. The only issue I have here now is you'll notice the contract's actually for like 2 years ahead of time. So if we approve this contract tonight, the bid won't come effective for two more years.
Mm. My question, and if I might, Madam Chair.
Yes, sir.
What concerns me is not just this contract, but the contract with the City of El Paso. And as you just saw, there was audit findings this past week on that. And so, just to start off, one thing is we set up a policy a while back to make sure every 5 years, doesn't matter what type of firm it is, who the firm is, we're going to go out and make sure that we go out for requests for qualifications or requests for proposals to make sure, one, we're either getting the best price or, two, best service. So it would be nice to get both, but the service is more important when it comes to those issues. So that's why, especially on the ones that we would go out for requests for qualifications. So throughout my experiences last time, in the last election that I was looking at, I researched a lot within the contract, and there's still a lot of questions that aren't clarified. And what I would ask for is, I guess, to direct our legal counsel, if it's fine with the board, to actually get some of these questions answered. To me, it looks not being transparent. One, there's several questions that need answers, and I haven't, as an individual of the public, I was not able to get that information. And I didn't want to use my authority as a board member to make sure that wouldn't get conflicted. But now I have the ability to solely use my authority as a board member. And so I want to also look at the contract when it comes to the City Consolidated Tax Office. When you look at not just the way it's set up, if you look at the contract that we have, and when I first requested information from our district to actually see what information we had, we pretty much didn't have no information. It was pretty much a couple of these pages where we would approve every year for every 2 years. And so when you look at the contract, you see just on this one that we're looking at, when you look at the city of El Paso and how it's set up by the Delgado Costa, Spencer, Linebarger, Perez firm, and now our contract is set up with Linebarger, Gogan, Blair, and Sampson. I want to know if those two entities are separate or within the same. And the concern I have within the other firm that's set up, of course, this firm is based out of Boston and is reputable within the work that they do. But the firm that was set up locally is set up by Delgado Costa, Spencer, Linebarger, and Perez. And I believe Carmen Perez is an individual that actually handles the work. And yet Delgado Costa and Spencer have different offices when it comes to the office that is set up within that contract. So it's a major concern. And so within that, I would really, one of the questions that was not answered by the city is with respect to one of the items that they have no responsive documents. I want to see if we can check, and it's common knowledge within the El Paso community that more than one set of lawyers is involved in the delinquent tax collection contract. Indeed, within the firm handling this work, several of them are from El Paso, and then the one that's based in Austin. But under the Texas disciplinary rules of professional conduct, it requires that all lawyers disclose all fee sharing arrangements to clients. And so one of the things is, how is that contract set up? Because when you look at the Delgado Costa Spencer, especially Joseph Spencer, or is known as a criminal attorney, and you have the other individuals that have different offices with a different firm. So to me, it's sort of like a carnival shell game. And so I would like our attorney to look at that, as well as to see what the difference is between this contract and the other contract. The other information is to see how that contract is set up within the city, and to see where there needs to be clarity. And so that's the major concern right now, and possibly as well as look at how much work has those individuals within the local firm that was set up, how many of them do actual work within the contract. And so I think it's critical that we be fair and transparent with the public. And so it's kind of a unique situation. If I probably wouldn't have researched throughout the past year, some of this stuff wouldn't have come to surface. And so I think it's critical that we look into it. And so there might be some other questions that I might have left out, but if it's okay with the board, if we could have some type of guidance to our council to look into that contract, what would you recommend as our council, or what?
If you want to make a list, the board wants to prepare a list of topics that we want to look at, we'll be happy to make information requests for the documents. The district is inclined to the various firms you're allowed to ask. I'm familiar with the campaign issues that were raised, obviously, because I've often watched it. In terms of making the request, it's just a matter of making a list of information that you want to know, and you'll send a request for it.
Okay. And so, would you need direction? Would you need a formal motion, or?
The board's going to need to take action on this to direct us to make a request if you want to get the information.
Okay. And now, the other issue is a time issue within this contract. The recommendation, would it be to move forward with this contract, or?
Yes.
Or hold?
I believe that based on the work that's been done, I understand the questions that you're asking and the concerns that you have about transparency, but I think to get the work and to continue moving along so the district isn't harmed in terms of timing, the collection of these fees, you should go ahead and move forward.
Could we hold that off for a month or two, or should we?
I honestly don't know.
What is there any time issue, time sensitive issues?
From what I read here, it looks like the first payment's due on November the 1st. So I don't know if postponing it for a month or two would cause any hardship or not. I can't answer that question.
I don't know that you'll get responsive information that quick. We're already in July. I would recommend that you move forward with this and have it finalized. At least you have somebody doing the work.
Can we just extend that for a one-year contract?
Well, this isn't for a one-year contract, but if you'll notice that it's actually for the 2013-2014 year. We actually just, in this 2011, we signed the 2012-2013, so it's like a 2 years.
So we have a contract with them until 2013.
That's correct. Well, like I said, I'm not sure how the what coverage is there.
Maybe Ms. Pettis can answer the question.
Ms. Pettis.
Kevin Pettis, and I'm a partner with the Linebar, Gallagher, Blair & Sampson firm. The timeliness on this contract is that the state comptroller produces the values, and so if you don't get in there and appeal and gather all the information, so we've been working on gathering information since March for you, and we prepare the packet, and then we appeal if it's necessary, and we challenge the values, because the values at CAD might be higher, but we go ahead and review all those values, we review the values that the state comptroller provides, and then we try to get those values lowered based on the appeal.
Okay, is there any time-sensitive issue? We're looking at 2013. Of course, you're asking for 2013-2014, which is way in advance.
Right, and usually we get them done at this time because it is time-sensitive, and yes, we would need to start preparing already for the following year.
Okay. I guess we could probably move forward with the stipulation we would have to. Is there any type of stipulation in here that within, let's say, a certain amount of time? I guess your recommendation, counsel, is to move forward, right?
Yes.
So I would recommend that we move forward, but that we question some of the questions that came up, and if anybody else has any other questions, if it's fine with the board, submit them to council and look into it. The other issue that I want to look at into it as well is the audit findings that were of the $1.2 million, just to make sure what actually entails for the district and if we have any liability or if we were affected anyway. I would like to get some type of report on that as well. I guess for right now, those are the questions that I have, and I'm sure I could come up with more.
Okay. If the board will, obviously any board action for us to make that type of request, so somebody will have to make a motion to authorize the administration and the council to review questions of other board members. If you have questions, you can submit them to the administration or to me. We'll be happy to work with you if you want to ask the questions.
Okay. And then we have to approve the contract, right?
Yes.
Is there Madam Chair?
Yes, sir.
I think, Leah, it might be better if we actually put an item on the agenda specifically for that. This deals with the tax appeal, the appeals on the valuations. What we're talking about, the other part you're talking about, is the actual tax collection. Okay. $1.2 million was a problem that the city's office in collecting the central, not the central Texas district, but the combined collection effort for the entire county, so to speak, was an issue with the cities. It's the city's the one that collects those funds.
Yeah. So related to this item, if I might, Madam Chair,
yes.
Mr. Coronado, related to this item, my questioning is the fact that you have the Valle Costa Spencer, which actually did no work in the tax collection, but they set up a local firm and somehow get some type of money. It's not clarified on to how much we're trying to identify, but when you look at this contract, for the district, it's set up at Linebarger, Gauguin, Blair, and Sampson.
Right.
My concern just within this contract is the fact that is there any sharing arrangements within that firm? Have they received any money from this contract, which is not set up in the past, it's set up this way? So I think there's several questions, but I believe an item, I guess, can we move forward on just at least starting something, or?
Well, I think Mr. Cornell's got a good point. If you're gonna ask, because this relates to the appeal, go ahead and approve the contract. Let's get this item out of the way, and then at a next meeting, let's have a specific item, and you guys can prepare a list. Maybe we can have a list prepared that we can review at the meeting, questions for out of the information, and you can direct us specifically what to do. But at least give us some time to create that. We gather the information.
Okay. Could we?
Just bring that up at another meeting in the future, but go ahead and move forward with this item.
At least to research, to start researching.
Yeah, I understand the issues, and we can certainly start preparing the list, but I think Mr. Cornell's point is a good one. If you want a specific action taken, let's go ahead and put an agenda before that on the meeting.
But at least to research, do you want some type of direction to start researching?
I don't think you need to give it to us tonight.
Okay.
Does that answer your questions, Mr. Rodriguez?
Yeah,
that, do you feel comfortable with that?
Yes, we'll just put an item on the next.
Tony, if
at
you would.
At your committee or at the next board meeting?
At the next board meeting when our council will be present.
Okay. Then do I have a motion to contract with Linebarger, Gogan, Blair, and Sampson LLP for the administrative appeal of any judicial appeal of the property value study findings as conducted by the Comptroller's Office as of January 1st, 2012 for the 2013-2014 school year?
I so move.
I'll second.
Thank you. Motion made and seconded. Any other discussion or questions? Tony?
Mrs. Casares?
Yes.
Mr. Cornell?
Yes.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Strauss?
Yes. That would then take us to number five, please.
Item five, and the time is now 6:53 p.m. The meeting is to be closed for discussion and update regarding the potential acquisition of real property, to hear recommendations for audit at the middle school assistant principal and food service director, and for discussion regarding appointment and hiring of staff auditor under Texas Government Code sections 551072 and 551074.